It is 8:57. You are in the matter of Ms. Heather Bannister's appeal of denial for accommodations. Dr. Cornwall.
Okay. So, Ms. Bannister, thank you for having that sent over. In my mind, however, it probably hurts you more than it helps you. The doctor said that, let's see, let me see. She has a anxiety disability that have continued to make test taking very difficult. And here's the problem, is that test taking is not considered a disability. It might be considered an impairment, but not a disability. And so we're trying to figure out whether or not you have a disability that interferes with your ability to take, to have access to the exam. So if you could help me by telling me what your impairments, how do they impact your activities of life, what you can and can't do because of them?
Okay. Okay. So bipolar in general has a lot of impairments that go along with it. So according to the ADA, a disability term means, you know, that a physical mental impairment limits one or major life activities, such as a major activity includes sleeping, learning, reading, concentrating, and thinking. And I got that off of the ADA website. And my bipolar, it affects my learning, reading, concentration, and thinking, and most definitely sleeping, as part of my symptoms is insomnia. So those are just some of the things that my bipolar, well, and my PTSD caused me to have. I was considered mentally stable all the years I was in school, and yet I still required all the testing accommodations. I was also considered mentally stable when I took the federal board, and yet I required all the accommodations. So it's the comprehension part, the reading of things. It takes my brain a while to like comprehend what I'm reading. So I find myself having to reread over again. The concentration, you know, I get distracted very easily. So there's lots of things that my bipolar causes me to have. I mean, even currently my employers accommodate me at work all the time for my bipolar and my PTSD.
Now, in what way do they accommodate you?
Whenever we have to do training, you know, like our annual training that we do, and we, you know, do the test or exams or whatever, even though they're technically kind of open book, but it always gives me the extra time that I need, and allow me to be put in a private room, so that, you know, it calms my anxiety down and I don't get easily distracted. I can focus. And then usually there's a reader on the computer that I can use for the questions to be read to me. So it's all those things that they help accommodate me for. A lot of the times I'll have the PT, like if I need help understanding like any questions regarding like patients, plan of care or whatever, they'll explain it to me by talking to me so that I don't have such difficulty reading it and rereading it and rereading it again type thing. As to reduce time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's things like that.
I think next time you ought to write the letter and have the doctor sign it. So I think that was very helpful to me. I think that you were able to put it in the fact that there are major life activities that you have difficulty with. It's not taking tests. Taking a test is not considered an activity that's essential. Okay. Learning, okay, however, is, and being able to process information, that is. Okay. But it's not the exam. So you are asking to have accommodations so you have better access to the exam and be able to do it like everybody else would. Okay.
Yes, correct.
Have an equal chance. Okay. It's not that you're asking for extra time in order to do better on the test. you're asking for extra time so you can process the information. Okay?
Yes.
I move that we approve her her application for accommodations, additional time, double time, reader, and separate room.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Any discussion? All right, hearing none, I'll call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Heather Bannister's request for ADA accommodations. Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, thank you for coming and good luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your reconsideration. It means a lot.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Bannister. Good luck.
Yes, thank you.
All right, next is 3D. Is that still on the agenda?
So James Nicario, I'm just gonna give the board an update, applied under universal recognition, in which his credentialing or past education would not be relevant. However, Mr. Navario moved to Arizona, let his Pennsylvania license lapse, and he did not have a license which would invalidate the universal recognition application, because you need to have a current license. So Mr. Navario currently is reinstating his Pennsylvania license so that we can continue with that application. Should he not be able to do that, then we will see Mr. Nicario again under a different application. So at this point, the board could take no action on this item as we await his reinstatement for Pennsylvania. And Mr. Harris, if I've missed anything, please chime in.
No, thank you, Dr. Donahue. I think that's right. At this point, I don't think there's anything before you to consider. And so if you want to just, you know, continue the matter until the application is either ripe to be presented to you, or he submits a different type of application for licensure.
So which would be clearer, just take no action or table it?
You know, I think they're really in essence the same. You can take no action.
If it helps, Dr. Cornwall, we're actually, he's already completed all CEUs and reinstatement. We are just currently awaiting a verification.
Right.
Okay, can we direct staff to approve his application once it comes in? And if it doesn't come in, then what happens?
We would approve it anyways.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that.
No, wait a minute.
So if he comes under universal recognition, he will qualify under everything that is required for universal recognition. And the board has already granted the executive director the power to approve. So that application would just be approved. Should he have to not use that application and come in under a new application, then I suspect that he would request the things that he's requesting. But again, it doesn't look like that is going to be a strong probability.
Okay, so I just wanted to cover all the eventualities. So I don't have any problem with the staff approving this, but if he can't get his license reinstated, then I wanted to know what's next. So what do we need to do as far as the board is today?
Well, Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, I think one option is to take no action. And then if he's able to successfully get his license reinstated, it sounds like staff will go ahead and approve his application. If not, then it'll be up with respect to licensure.
Okay. All right.
This is Peggy. You know, just so I completely understand, I don't understand if he passed the MPTE in 1992 and he had a license and he's been practicing, I don't understand what the problem is.
Well, the problem, Peggy, is that he's foreign educated. Uh-huh. He's foreign educated, but he did pass the MPTE back in 92. And he was just worried that his that because he's not able to pass the TOEFL, he's worried that it was going to become an issue in his licensure. So he wanted to get it, he wanted to get this approved prior, but it doesn't pertain to his current application on file.
Okay. I was very confused, I have to tell you.
Yeah. I processed it and so was I, so no worries.
Well, then I move that we take no action.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded to take no action on the application for James Nasario. Dr. Cornwall.
Yes.
Mr. Clinton.
Yes.
Ms. Hunter.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item is number 4A, review, discussion, and possible action for informal hearing case number 21-01, Danielle Ruff, physical therapist.
And Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, I want to let you know that Ms. Ruff is represented by Ms. McClellan, and Ms. Levin is also present on the call.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I did it. I'm sorry. Ms. L.
Okay. Let's have the board.
You have a script to read.
And staff introduce themselves.
Okay. Dr. Cornwell, professional member.
Here.
Mr. Clinton, public member.
Here.
Ms. Hunter, professional member.
Present.
Dr. Bustillo, professional member.
Here.
Dr. King, professional member.
Here.
Ms. Crowley, staff.
Present.
Ms. Cardoza, staff.
Present.
Ms. Chepia, staff.
Present.
Mr. Harris, Assistant Attorney General.
Present.
And I'm Karen Donahue, the Executive Director.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Ruff, would you and your attorney both introduce yourself?
My name's Anne McClellan. I'm the attorney for Ms. Ruff.
And I'm Danielle Ruff. I am a physical therapist in Tucson, Arizona. I've been practicing for 12 years.
Okay. And just reminding your attorney that she may make opening and closing statements, but that questioning occurs between the board and the licensee. Okay.
Okay.
This interview is, JL, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Dr. Jane Levin, and I am the patient who lodged the complaint.
Okay, thank you. This interview is being conducted pursuant to ARS 32-2046, and I've got a script that I need to read because of that. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any or all of the following disciplinary action. 1, issue a decree of censure. 2, place restrictions upon a licensee's practice. 3, issue a civil penalty of not more than $500. 4, issue other disciplinary action. 5, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of continuing education as specified by the board. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes and rules, the board may dismiss the case. If the board finds that the violations warrant suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. Okay. Do either of the parties have witnesses that they plan to speak?
No.
This is Anne McClellan. Other than Ms. Ruff, who is one of our witnesses, our witnesses submitted their testimony through sworn declarations that were provided to Ms. Donahue for the board to review.
Okay. Karen, are you going to give us a brief overview?
I will. Complaint 2101 was opened after Ms. JL alleges that on 2/6/2019, She declined physical therapy services on this date after initiation of care due to excessive noise and distraction. Ms. JL alleges that she was billed for this date of service when she alleges no services were provided. The potential violations of law include ARS 32-2044-4, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist, ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, ARS 32-2044, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, fraudulent representations, and ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records.
Okay. All those who plan to speak in this matter, we need to swear you in, right? So Ms. Ruff, JL, and I think Karen, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So if each of you would please raise your right hand. And do you swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth?
Ms. Ruff?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. JL?
I do.
And I do.
Karen? Okay.
I do.
All right. All right. So we'll first hear from Ms. Ruff. The board may have some questions. And then JL may speak at that point. All right. So Ms. Ruff, either you or your attorney, if you'd like to make an opening statement.
I would like to make an opening statement on behalf of Ms. Ruff.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, we appreciate the board very carefully reviewing the evidence in this case and taking the time to review what we've submitted. We respectfully ask that the board please keep in mind that the evidence has to prove that Ms. Ruff more likely than not or probably did what she's accused of doing. And it's a very serious accusation that's been lodged against her. It's fraudulent billing and a finding by the board that she engaged in that conduct has serious repercussions for her through her career. It's the kind of finding that means insurers will no longer have her as a covered provider. It can have employment repercussions. So we appreciate how seriously you take this matter and ask that you very carefully weigh all of the evidence, because we believe the heavy weight of the evidence shows that this seems to be a misunderstanding, that 2 years after the fact, JL is not remembering the date correctly, and that it was actually on February 11th, 2019 that she left early when she was never billed for that visit, and that she did have a full visit on February 6th, 2019. That evidence includes sign-in sheets from ATI, which we have sworn declarations from their compliance officer that those are unaltered, and we submitted those sign-in sheets, including all of the other patient names, to show that those were created on the dates of the visit, and they have JL's signature on them for 2/11/19. So that's inconsistent with her saying she never came to ATI on 2/11/19. We also had those analyzed by a board certified handwriting expert, and looking at all of JL's signatures in the chart, she gave a very strong expert opinion that it is a strong probability, which is more likely than not. It's very likely that that was JL's own signature on 2/11/19, meaning she was present that date. Those sign-in sheets also contradict JL's testimony in this case. She gave an interview with Ms. Donahue back in March 2021. And during that interview, and throughout this matter, she's been adamant that she was the only patient in the clinic on the date she left early. But on 2/6/19, the sign-in sheets show that there were two other patients there, which make it even less likely that this happened on 2/6/19. We also have a communication log in medical records and a sworn declaration from Kristen Flores, who entered the note in the communication log, which shows that JL had an appointment on 2/11/19, and she did not call until approximately 8:45 that morning to tell ATI that she would not be returning. If she had left early on February 6th and told people she wasn't returning that date, there would be no reason for that note to be in the communication log or for her to have an appointment on the 11th. And there's no note on February 6th documenting any calls or communications from JL that she would not be returning. And we think that further supports that the date that she left early was actually the 11th and not the 6th. We also have the medical records that were created on the dates of the visit. They show that she had a full visit on February 6th. Ms. Ruff didn't make up from thin air all of the information that's contained in the notes from the 6th. It shows a time in and time out. It shows the exercises and assessments. And then there's the other medical record, which is on the 11th, Ms. Ruff prepared a discharge note documenting that that is the date that JL came in and said she needed a private room where she was complaining of noise. And so Ms. Ruff documented that she had this conversation saying, I'm sorry, we don't have a private room for you. And so she discharged her to note that, because she didn't have a private room, she wouldn't be returning. There'd be no reason to put that note on the 11th unless it happened on the 11th. Then you have, we ask you to carefully review JL's own testimony, comparing her interview with her other statements to the board. And it's natural that people are not going to have a perfect memory more than 2 years later. She had no reason to reflect on these events until at least 18 months after they happened, when ATI sent her her bills. We don't know why ATI waited that long. Ms. Ruff was no longer employed there at the time. But a person who doesn't reflect on events for a year and a half later is not going to have a perfect memory. And if you listen to her interview, she admits that. She says she doesn't remember the February 4th, 2019 visit, her initial one. Repeatedly, over and over, she says, I don't remember the visit. I don't recall. It's been too long ago. And so the 2-6 visit was her second full visit, was only 2 days later. It is natural for people, when nothing eventful happens, to sometimes combine those events into one. And we think that that's probably innocently what happened here, because her testimony about the 11th visit isn't consistent. I've already pointed out the sign-in sheet issue, but during her interview about the appointment on the 11th, she didn't remember she even had an appointment that day. When Ms. Donahue asked her about that, she questioned her and said, oh, are you saying I had an appointment on the 11th? And she had no memory of any of the information about canceling the appointment on the 11th. And so that's inconsistent with several different documents. She submitted screenshots after the board's initial hearing. No one was aware of those screenshots, either ATI during the billing appeal process, when she submitted the original complaint. She didn't mention any of that during her interview. And those screenshots don't have data for us to know when they were entered or why they were entered. So it's quite possible maybe she put those in her calendar notes when she was trying to piece together her billing appeal, because she didn't remember the visit on the 11th, or maybe she did it during this investigation. I honestly don't know, because that information has never been provided to anyone. But those screenshots, again, are inconsistent with everything created at the time. And you have Ms. Ruff's own statements that this is not something she ever has or ever would do. If a patient canceled, she wouldn't bill them. And that's why the 2/11/19 note says what it says. And to support that, we've given you 3 letters of support from professionals in the community who have worked directly with her, as well as Ms. Flores's declaration that she worked with her at ATI, saying that what she's being accused of is not who she is. They've never had any similar conduct, never heard of her doing that, never seen her do that. It's just completely inconsistent with Ms. Ruff's character, practice, and customs. We understand that Ms. Donahue pointed out some documentation that she felt could have more detail. While I don't believe that that rises to the level of requiring discipline, especially given what Ms. Ruff has been put through in this investigation, meaning how serious the allegations are against her. Ms. Ruff did take it upon herself to do several hours of continuing education on document and billing, because she took it as a learning opportunity. So, and that's a summary of what we believe the evidence shows. I've submitted very detailed explanations of the evidence, and hopefully you'll review those and have reviewed those, because these are serious accusations and the evidence doesn't support it. I don't know why JL believes it happened on the 6th versus the 11th. I can't explain that for you. other than I, based on all of the objective evidence created by several different people, not just Ms. Ruff, it doesn't add up and doesn't show that Ms. Ruff did what she's accused of. It shows that most likely there's just a memory error here or a misunderstanding, and that she did have a full visit on February 6, 2019, and the early visit where she left early was on the 11th. So we would ask that you dismiss this matter without disciplining Ms. Ruff, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And the board may have some questions. So any board members have any questions for Ms. Ruff?
This is Peggy Hunter. With all due respect, I think Ms. McClellan, I disagree with you. The inconsistencies in the documentation are terrible. When somebody like Dr. Donahue doesn't understand uplift, I don't know how anybody else is going to. The evaluation and what she put, I mean, if I picked up this chart, I don't think I'd be able to follow the plan of care. And our job as therapists and clinicians is to protect the public. I found, Ms. Ruff, I found your interview with Dr. Donahue very vague and very inconsistent. And I looked at the sign-in log that does not look like JL's signature to me for the third visit. So I'd like to know, just a minor thing, when a patient comes in and says the music is loud and there's therapists making noise, I would think you would say, okay, I'll turn down the music and tell the other therapist to be quiet. Not, we don't have a private room. That's pretty unprofessional.
I don't recall that visit. And I don't recall, who I am as a therapist, and being that I was the clinic director, I would have addressed those complaints. I do not recall what had happened in that instance.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Ruff from the board members?
Ms. Ruff, can you tell us a little bit about the CEUs that you have taken?
Sure. I have taken almost 8 hours of documentation courses through MedBridge. The first one being documentation, the evaluation and reevaluation. The second one was documentation, everything after the evaluation until the discharge. And then the third one was CPT codes utilized by PTs and OTs.
Thank you.
As a follow-up to that question, what changes, if any, have you made based on your continuing education relative to documentation?
Being more thorough within the, in the documentation of that discharge summary, I should have put patient arrived today in the clinic, canceled visit due to patient complaints of headache and that she needed a private treatment room. I think I could have been more specific in that. I could have deleted all of the measurements on that discharge summary, considering there were no measurements taken. It was just a copy over from the initial eval. And that's what pulls up with a discharge summary. And I explained that to Karen, and that could have been done better.
Okay, anything relative to patient care?
I mean, I feel like I need to support my doc, what I do in my documentation 100%. I feel like I need to be more specific in how I document what I do in my evaluations, in my treatment notes. To me, I've been taught nomenclature of an upglide, being that it's a PA glide with a patient in supine where your thrust goes towards the patient's opposite eye. And that is something that I need to be specific of, more so in my documentation, along with other things.
Okay, so can you give me some more specific examples relative to patient care? You say you know you need to do better, or you know, but can you give me an example of how you've changed your documentation?
I've been more thorough in documenting everything that I do. I mean, in terms of patient care, I feel like my patient care is, it doesn't need to be questioned here. I don't feel like that's necessary, but I do feel like I will support everything that I do within my documentation, meaning that I will, you know, address patient complaints. I will address, you know, when they in and they discuss, you know, if something, an exercise bothers them, I will further document how I either modified or changed that exercise or assisted them with that exercise. I will document the reason behind my treatment and what I'm performing so that it is thorough and is defensible. And in terms of, you know, patient care, I feel like any patient that comes before me, my optimum goal is to get them back to their prior level function and decrease their pain, if not get rid of their pain completely. But, you know, my goal is to continue to document that that is what I am going to do with my treatment provided.
So do you understand some of the dilemma that board members might have when there's no neurological exam performed, and maybe that wasn't indicated, but we don't know why. Why didn't you do a neurologic exam? There's no specific location, frequency, duration relative to the headaches or the frequency, the intensity. Can you understand how, since there's nothing in the record, we go, is this because you're not documenting correctly, or is this because you just don't do a very good exam?
I understand. And I will, my goal is to make sure that that is very apparent moving forward as to documenting the evaluations, reevaluations, and everything else in between.
So if we were to pull another chart, do you think we would have seen major changes since you completed the continuing ed?
I believe so. Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
Hear me.
Any other questions by board members?
Karen Bustillo, do you see many patients that have headache issues like this?
Yes, I would say it's not common. They're not the majority of what I see. But yes, I would say I've seen cervicogenic headaches.
Okay. So the office atmosphere has been conducive in the past. We've been able to work through noise issues and things like that with people with headache.
Right. And, you know, just recalling from when I was working with ATI, we only had one treatment table that was further to the back. That's usually where I would take these patients and close a curtain because there wasn't a fluorescent light directly over that table. So that is what I would do to make it more conducive for the patient.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. JL, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, yes, thank you. Excuse me. I have a very weak signal, so if I drop, I'm gonna go on my phone and come back. But for now, the connection is stable. I have never lodged a complaint against a medical professional before. And I have to say that what I have submitted is correct. And I also submitted a letter from a former physical therapist after I had a total knee replacement. Her name is Mary Husband, and it went to Karen Donahue. And I hope everybody got a copy of that. And I also sent that signature on the 11th to somebody who is an expert, but I did not ask for a report because I didn't think I needed one. And that person immediately said, that is not your signature. And it's not my signature. February 6th, When I walked in, the music was blaring and there were two men throwing a football across the room. There is only one room, and making loud jokes. And when I told DR that my headache was getting worse, she did not ask the men to stop. I didn't know she was the clinic director until just now, but I would think that a clinic director would ask the men, who I assume were also employees, to stop throwing a football and stop speaking so loudly for a patient who is coming in with a headache for treatment. That did not happen. DR may have turned the music down. I do not remember if she did or didn't. She did not turn it off. I do know that. That was the session that I got up and left because my headache was getting worse and worse. And I told DR that I was leaving, that I could not stand the noise, and I left. February 11th, there was no appointment. There were no case notes. I was not there. I was at home. And I don't know what else to say, but it didn't happen. So February 6th was my second and last appointment, and that lasted about 10 minutes. I am really sorry to have to do this. I just hate going through this process. And it is hard for me to understand that DR could not remember this. I was a practicing psychologist for over 40 years. In 40 years, I had one patient leave the middle of a session, maybe 20 years ago. I still know that person's name. I still remember the context. I still remember what happened and what happened after that. So it's very surprising to me that something that I assume doesn't happen often would be something that would be very memorable to a physical therapist, but apparently DR does not remember that at all. I don't know what else to say other than what I have submitted and what the facts are as I have written them. And I'm sorry we have to go through this, I really am, but I think that there is an error, and it's a serious error in practice and in billing, and I hope no other patients have to go through this.
Do any board members have questions for JL? No questions. So can you tell me a little bit more about, you said you took the signature pages to someone else. What were their qualifications, et cetera?
This is somebody who has published a writing test that's used internationally, and a handwriting test. And, you know, it's just somebody I know. It's not a professional that I hired. And this person looked at the signature, looked at the other signatures. I wrote a signature, immediately said, that's not your signature. And I have to say, from my perspective, it looks nothing like any signature I've ever written.
Okay. Yeah, it's unfortunate you weren't able to get a statement from that person.
I didn't realize I needed that. I thought that the other data were sufficient.
Okay.
Because there were no case notes on the 11th, it was just a discharge summary. So I assume that DR assumed there was no session because there were no case notes.
Yeah.
Dr. Cromwell, it's Kelly King. Just looking at the signature pages and just thinking through, you know, some of the evidence that I have in front of you, I'm absolutely no signature expert. There are some similarities in the curves of the letters. I also, it does not look as though another name was whited out and added to number two. There's so many signatures after her signature or after the signature on that day that were similar to the ones in the week before, the session before. So it's such a tough one. I think we have two things in front of us. We have whether or not the session actually happened, and then we have some pretty significant gaps in documentation, just generally speaking, for Dr. Ruff in patient care evaluation assessments and determining medical necessity for the treatments that she chose. You know, I don't at all want to insinuate that Dr. Levin is not remembering correctly, but I do think the evidence in front of us is compelling that the session on 211 at least started and then ended pretty quickly.
But question, if I could get that handwriting person on the telephone and give her the link, I don't know if this can happen really quickly. Would that be helpful to you?
This is Anne McClellan. I don't know if it's my place. I've never heard of this handwriting expert today. So, you know, for what it's worth, for due process reasons, it's concerning if that were to happen. But obviously, it's boards. I just need to put on the record our objection, given this very late, no opportunity to have anything evaluated with respect to it. It's a person who is her friend, which would be another reason for our objection. So I understand the board needs to do what it needs to do, but I just want to put that on the record for Ms. Ruff.
Yeah. Dr. Cornwall, members of the board, you have a fourth signature you could look at, which is on page 23 of the patient record. So just for comparison, there is another signature in the patient record on page 23.
Thank you.
And Dr. Cornwall, members of the board, this is Mark Harris. It seems that we may be going a little bit into deliberations, and before we do that, we should see if anybody else has any questions, and if not, then perhaps, Dr. Cornwell, you could give each side a brief opportunity to make a closing statement, and then the board can go into deliberations.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Harris.
So do any other board members have any questions for JL? All right, so Ms. Ruff, either you or your attorney, would you like to make a closing statement before we go into deliberation?
Yeah, I'll make a closing statement, and if Ms. Ruff wants to make a statement at the end, I'll let her do that. I understand the board is faced with really serious allegations here, and that's why we've done a lot of work to try to give you all of the evidence we can. We got the sign-in sheets, which, you know, ATI has given you two sworn declarations that those are unaltered, signed by the patient, not forgery, authentic, created on the date that is on the paper. I don't know what else we could give you to authenticate those. We did provide you with the unredacted version so that you could see that that signature of JL is intermingled and overlapping with all of these other signatures. There would be no way to forge that or recreate that. And there's been no allegation that any of those other signatures are incorrect. And there's an admission that the signature on the fourth and the sixth are correct. We gave that along with the other signatures and initials that appear in JL's medical chart, all of the signatures we have and initials, to a board certified, well-known, neutral, she has no interest in this case, doesn't know Ms. Ruff, doesn't know me, to evaluate it. And she prepared a very professional report going through and explaining why she thinks there's a strong probability that's JL's signature. She points out for you with arrows where this the similarities are, and that JL's signature, as is natural, does have variation depending on how she's signing it. And so, again, we understand JL, no one's calling JL a liar. We would never do that. All we can say is the evidence seems to indicate her memory just isn't correct on what date this happened. To believe her, you have to deny, you have to ignore so many pieces of evidence. There's a communication log created by Kristen Flores, who has submitted a sworn declaration saying that there was an appointment on the 11th. There was no call from JL to tell them she's not coming back until after that appointment started. You have the discharge note from Ms. Ruff on the 11th stating that's the date they have the conversation about the lack of the private room, and her, by making the discharge note, was indicating she's not coming back. You have Ms. Ruff's note from the 6th, and we understand you have concerns about, you know, whether there's sufficient explanation of why things were done or why those procedures were done, but you do have a note that's very detailed on the amount of time that she was there. It has all of the assessments. That information wasn't made up from thin air. It came from a full visit. That's where that information comes from. You'd also have to ignore those sign-in sheets, which are verified by two declarations by the ATI compliance officer, who also has no skin in this game. He's not part of this investigation. You have the handwriting expert. And we'd ask you to take a look at how it is intermingled with those other patient signatures. At the time that Ms. Ruff was interviewed, in fairness to her, she didn't have all of that evidence. And she was very honest that she doesn't have a memory. Sometimes patients do leave appointments early, especially patients who have headaches or they have a family issue, an emergency, or not feeling well for whatever reason. So she was very honest that she doesn't remember the appointment. And she did the best she could to answer questions when she was being shown screenshots or portions of the records on the screen. But since then, that was very early on, since then, all of this other information has been gathered from the sign-in sheets, the declarations, the experts, and it all adds up that she did not fraudulently bill this patient. I cannot explain why JL remembers it or believes it happened that way, because all the evidence that was created by numerous different people on the dates of service, not relying on anyone's memory, indicate that the 211 visit is the one where it was short and she was never billed for that. Like I said, we understand you're having questions and some concerns about documentation and gaps in that documentation, and that is why Ms. Ruff did take it upon herself to do 8 hours of continuing education and to change her perspective and make sure that her documentation is more detailed. So in closing, again, I don't know how you get to the burden of proof that more likely than not, this all happened on the 6th versus the 11th, given all the evidence that we have shown you and presented and pieced together for you. But we would ask that you very carefully review that. And if the documentation concerns exist, we'd ask that you give her consideration for all of those hours of continuing education that she has done. Thank you.
JL, would you like to make a statement?
I would, thank you. I am not home. I'm in Oregon, so I don't have all of my paperwork. And I'm on a laptop. But I did pull up the notes from the person who looked at my signature. And if that is critical, I don't think it's critical because there was no session. But I have three notes. One is your J loops curve left to the left. Number two, there is no E on your name. Number three, Levin line wavy is not how you do it. Now, I realize that I didn't get this on a certified document and submit it because I didn't know that I would need it. I was just wondering, because it's not my signature, if somebody else who knows more than I do thought it was my signature. You know, I came in for the second session and the noise was unbearable. And it's just overwhelming to me that DR does not remember that. And when I looked at the alleged treatment notes for the second visit, it looks like the first visit. My pain had increased, but the treatment hadn't changed, if there was treatment. But what I'm saying is there were no case notes, there was a discharge. I called to make sure that the appointment had been canceled on the 11th, only to find out that it had not been canceled, and I canceled it. I was not charged for a no-show. I was not charged for a visit. Nothing happened on the 11th for me. I wasn't there. And that's all I can tell you. That's what I know. And I just hope that you'll review the record and do whatever the right thing is that a board does in this situation. And I thank you for the time.
Thank you very much for participating. Are there any, since there are no last questions by board members, this concludes the portion of the interview where the board takes evidence and hears arguments. The board will now deliberate the case in public session, which means that no further questions of the board, but we will be discussing this in an open session. So what are the board members' initial thoughts?
Well, concerning the signature, if the board members would look at in the initial hearing brief, page 39, the signature on the financial responsibility page matches her signature on the 11th. Mm-hmm. The line it's very close. So I kind of believe that the signatures are valid. They are different than the first two, but here's another signature that's the same. So I think she was there on the 11th, and she just said she wasn't charged for it, or she wasn't charged a no-show. So in that regard, I don't see, I kind of side with Dr. Ruff on that the patient did show up and was there, but the documentation from what I see and what I've heard from the professionals on the board is not, needs improvement and is not up to standard.
This is Peggy. That's good to know, Mike. Thank you. In view of the documentation, there's a lot of questions about what was done and what was not done and what was billed for. And it's very serious, I think. And actually, I want to move this to a formal hearing.
Okay. Let's not make that do you want to make that a formal motion?
I make a motion to move this
to a formal
hearing to include the additional violations the investigative report shows.
Ms. Hunter, the additional and the investigative report have been added to the informal hearing.
Okay, thank you.
All of that at your disposal. And the only reason to move something to a formal hearing is if you're interested in suspension or revocation.
I believe that moving it to a formal hearing will increase the discipline and fines.
It doesn't increase your disciplinary action. It could potentially increase the fine.
Correct.
Okay. Do we have a second? Since there's a formal motion on the table. Going once, going twice. Hearing no second, that motion fails for lack of a second. let's go back to talking. Any other comments or observations by board members? Your thoughts? I would prefer to have a little bit more discussion before we get another motion. But if you just, I'm not going to prevent you from making a motion, but that's what I would prefer, is to have a little bit more discussion.
So, Dr. Cornwall, members of the board, after reviewing the evidence in front of us, as well as the information that we were first presented with in May, I think the evidence is compelling. And Ms. McClellan and Dr. Ruff provided for us non-biased expert information regarding signature verification and likelihood. I am, you know, respectfully agreeing that potentially Dr. Levin's memory of the events may not be quite as accurate regarding that the session that actually looks as and appears in all of the evidence we have as though it at least started the session. She was there, she signed in, Dr. Ruff met with her, and then she left early. So I would be inclined to say that the evidence that we have supports that the visit did happen. However, she was not charged for it because it did not get completed. And that was the right thing to do, is not charge her for the session. Secondly, though, I think that we also have the documentation piece to deal with as a board. But first of all, the complaint is really about whether or not a session was fraudulently documented, potentially, and billed for. And I don't see the evidence that supports that. Quite the contrary, I think the evidence shows that the session did start, that Dr. Levin did sign in, and then left early, was discharged from the clinic, and not billed for the session.
Karen, do you have any thoughts?
I do. I agree, especially after looking at the sign-in, the initial paperwork sign-in by Dr. Levin. I believe that mirrors more closely that visit on 211, which really does make me believe that she did have two sessions that were done in that 1 week and then billed for. And so I do believe that it was that third session that was likely ended early and the patient left, which would make sense if, you know, the discharge was done immediately at, you know, that same day. I do strongly believe that there are some really more serious documentation issues. My feeling is that even with the documentation course that has been taken, I would at least like to see one chart review just to make sure that things are good, and then maybe take it from that point on based on what we find.
Thank you. This one's been hard for me because JL's statements and testimony have been very consistent in all the times she's come before us. And so that's kind of, I keep going back and forth, but I have to land back on, I'm not a handwriting expert. I do know that my signature doesn't look very the same, especially if I have to sign forms that I know they're not, I don't feel like they're that important, like signing when you use your credit card. No one would ever be able to tell my signature from that. But I keep going back to that. But JL's testimony and story has been very, very consistent. And that has made me to think more than once about which way to go. But I've got to go with the experts in handwriting. I am not. So it sounds like we're kind of on the same page relative to that, but we have some concerns with the documentation. If you want to pursue that, we need to, I think, Karen Donahue, do we eliminate those statutes that we don't want to consider, or how's the best way to proceed so that we narrow it down to what we want, what to deal with, then go with the conclusions of law, et cetera.
So Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, what you would do in the, if you were interested in anything regarding the documentation, particularly a chart review, that chart review would have to be a disciplinary action just by the fact that it's a chart review. If you want to do that in your findings of fact, you would only identify the violation of law to which you are issuing your order. And then you would support that with any findings of fact following that. Once you've achieved those two things, then you could discuss a potential board order if that's what you would like to do. You may also accept the documentation courses that she's taking, issue a non-disciplinary order where you accept the one she's taking, or your other options are available.
And Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, if I might just add, it may be helpful if you have it available. If you took a look at page 4 of the informal hearing brief, on page 4 of that brief, the possible violations are identified. The board members can take a look at the 4 that have been identified. And if you believe that there is sufficient evidence to find a violation of any of those statutes, you can simply, as Karen suggested, identify that statute, identify the facts in the investigative report and in the testimony that supports that, and then proceed to discussing what you think is the appropriate disposition.
So we're essentially doing findings of fact, right?
If you're interested in issuing a board order.
Yeah. If you're finding a violation, Dr. Cornwell.
Okay. So I move that we eliminate item 2 and 3 on that list. So
Mark, why don't you just identify the one that you're interested in instead of eliminating? Because you're making a motion.
ARS 2044-20, but I'm inclined to include 2044-4 only because I link poor documentation with substandard care.
So your motions is for findings of fact to include ARS 2044-4 and conclusions of law that would identify ARS 2044-4 engaging in the performance of substandard care, as well as ARS 3220-44-20 failing to maintain adequate patient records. Is that correct?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell, I believe JL has her hand up. I don't know if it's appropriate for her to speak now.
Unfortunately, no, it's not.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Is this for conclusions of law or findings of facts?
This is for conclusions of law.
Okay, thank you.
You are in discussion.
So we have a motion, we have a second, and let's, any discussion on the motion?
I feel like this captures what we are looking for at this time.
Okay. Do people feel like they have enough information to vote on this motion?
Yes.
Then I'll call the question.
The motion before you for complaint 2101, Ms. Daniel Ruff, is to accept the following conclusions of law, which would be ARS 2044-4, engaging in substandard care, ARS 3220-44-20, maintaining adequate patient records. Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
And Dr. King?
Yes.
Conclusions of law are adopted.
Okay. So do we have a motion on findings of fact?
And Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, to assist, again, I'll refer you to the informal hearing brief, and it looks like you may want to consider the findings under paragraphs A and D. If you feel like there's other information that supports either of those violations that you heard this morning during either party's testimony, certainly can add to it, but just as a starting off point.
Mr. Harris, clarify, did you say A as in apple and D as in dog, or B as in boy?
It would be D as in dog.
Okay, that's right, yes. I just want to make sure. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I kept looking at B, where did we get that one?
Yeah, okay. Me too.
No, it was D, I'm sorry if that didn't come across.
It's your accent. okay, so do we have a motion to that effect?
You do not. So you should review the paragraphs under A, review the paragraph under D, decide if you want to keep all of them, none of them, and if you want to add anything additional.
Well, I will move to accept items A and D under the investigative report as findings of fact.
Second.
Any discussion on that motion?
Karen, just really, really quickly, just wanted to point out a typo in A, yes, number 17, that date says discharge, yes, documentation should be 2/11, not 2/1.
That is correct. So I've made that notation. I apologize for the error.
Thank you. Yes. Did you get a second, Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're in discussion on the motion. Hearing none, I will call that question.
So the motion before you is to find findings of fact A 1 through 17 and D 1 through 6 as findings of fact for complaint 2101, Ms. Daniel Ruff. Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
You are now at your board order.
Okay, Karen, I think you were the one that suggested this, and you want to kind of elaborate on that? We're at that point.
Okay, I really do feel that even with the documentation course that you had taken, and we've certainly accepted other MedBridge courses. I would like to see the certificate of completion for the course that you took. But I also feel that we need a minimum of 1 to 3 chart reviews to ensure that the extensiveness of the core documentation has been corrected.
Karen, this is Peggy. I agree with you, but I really, really feel strongly about having at least 3 reviews, okay, chart reviews.
All right.
Karen, do you want to modify that motion? We don't have a second yet.
Okay. Then I do recommend that we have 3 chart reviews
to be completed within what period of time?
3 months.
And early termination available?
Yes.
And Dr. Cornwell, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, sorry to interrupt. Dr. Bustillo, You had mentioned the continuing education. Did we want to memorialize that and then allow Dr. Ruff to submit the certificates in satisfaction of that? And if you wanted to do that, if you could articulate how many hours of continuing education in what areas?
Sure. It sounds like she took 8 hours of course in documentation and billing. And if that is the case, then I would like to see that certificate. I feel like that is adequate and consistent with what we typically do for documentation coursework.
So Dr. Basio, members of the board, we do have those certificates. They have been submitted, so I can affirm that those certificates exist and the courses have been completed.
Okay.
Okay, good.
I guess the question that I had, though, for you know, future cases, did we want to make sure that we memorialize that in the order, allow the professional 3 months to complete it, knowing that she already has and that, you know, it is completed, but in the future, if someone should look back, we can see what we've done, chart reviews, education. That might be helpful for posterity, you know, looking back. Because, absolutely. You know, because if we don't include the education, then it won't be, you know, part of the story.
Absolutely.
Mr. Harris is looking for an addendum to your motion that would include 8 hours of documentation with the acceptance of the courses already taken.
And again, only if that's the,
correct.
You know, the consensus of the board. I don't want to.
No, I think it's, I think that's good. So Karen, are you okay with that? Karen Bastillo, are you good with all that? So
I am.
Karen, don't you restate what you just said, because I think that capsulized what we want.
Okay, and then we still need a second before you start discussion. So the motion before you is to issue a board order, complaint 2101, Ms. Daniel Ruff, to include a 3-chart review that needs to be completed within 3 months with early termination available upon successful completion, and also to include 8 hours of documentation, but enable Ms. Ruff to already submit the courses that she has taken in documentation to satisfy that requirement. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, now we have a motion and we have a second. Hopefully everybody understands the motion. Now, what, any discussion on that motion? Okay, I think it sounds like we're ready for the vote.
So the motion before you for complaint 2101, Ms. Daniel Ruff, physical therapist, is to issue a board order that consists of a three patient chart review to be completed within 3 months of the effective date of the order with early termination available, and to include 8 hours of documentation with the board acceptance of the courses that have been taken prior. Dr. Cornwall.
Yes.
Mr. Kling.
Yes.
Ms. Hunter.
Yes, sorry.
Thank you. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
The motion passes. We thank you all very much. I will be getting something out to you, Ms. Ruff, by email and mail, as well as Ms. McClellan and Ms. Levin.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, JL.
Could I just say one close? I want to thank the board for the diligence that you have put into this complaint. I feel very comfortable with the work that has been done, and especially my connection with Dr. Donahue back and forth. I have one suggestion in the future. If, in this case, if DR's attorney submits a professional saying that that was my handwriting, that I could be notified of that so that I could have a professional also do that and submit the findings. Because I felt that came out of left field, and I have no way to respond to that other than my personal statement. So that would be my recommendation if it were to come up in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, JL.
Thank you.
Karen, do you want to stop the recording for a moment?
I do. Thank you. We're going to stop the recording at 10:12 a.m.